And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets with Tim McMaster, Zach Rosenblatt, and Marissa Dunn.
Can't wait!
All right, has everyone had a chance to just exhale, relax? Maybe you took the day off from work. I think it would have been worth it. What a difference a week makes. A disappointing Jets loss, packed full of mistakes, typical Jets plays, gives way to one of the greatest Jets wins in a long, long time. Whether you're watching live on YouTube or listening to the pod, thanks for joining us. This is the Can't Wait podcast. I'm Tim McMaster, hosting along with our Athletic Jets reporter, Zach Rosenblatt, Marissa Dunn, producing, otherwise sitting this one out for logical reasons. We are going to talk about the game, obviously, the win 31-30 over the Browns in Cleveland. It was over with 2 minutes to play. The Browns ahead 30-17. Somehow the Jets pull this thing out. Before we get into what happened, one thing for the chat, I'd just like to see what people come up with, what people's thoughts are. Fill out this sentence for us in the chat today. This was the biggest Jets win since blank. And just let us know, you know, what it goes back to for you. A couple of years, a long time, the AFC Championship, reaching the AFC Championship, whatever it is. Zach, you were there, obviously. In fact, we have proof that you were there after the game. Here it is. If you're listening, you're not seeing this, but on YouTube, Zach took to the field, got his picture taken, a little bit of a selfie with Brownie the Elf, who we obviously talked a lot about on the episode last week. But there he is, Zach and Brownie the Elf. But Zach, to go take us from, not take us through it, but from 2 minutes left to onside kick, I guess, and then game over. Just, I want to hear about the atmosphere in the stadium. Like, what happened in the stadium? At what point did it become scary for Browns fans, silent for Browns fans along the way?
Oh man, you know, it was just like, it didn't even seem like it was realized what was happening, honestly. So it's still strange. Like, I because you get to a certain point in game sometimes where, like, you know it's over, so like you're kind of half watching and half writing. And then Nick Chubb scored the touchdown, and I didn't even like see everything that happened in the play. Like, I didn't see DJ Reed miss the tackle in my head. And I didn't process, like, oh, that was an interesting choice for him not to go down, like all that stuff. So he scores that. And then they come back out on the next drive. They throw one pass completion. The next pass, Corey Davis is wide open down the field, 66-yard touchdown. And that's when it went silent. That's what Joe Flacco even said. He's like, and this is somebody who's played in a lot of big games, obviously. He said he's never experienced like the level of silence that he felt after that touchdown. It's as if like the Browns fan just knew what was about to happen. Like, they've been, you know, they've been trained in being a Browns fan, as Jets fans are, and trained me. Like, Jets have been on the other side of this many times, not this specifically, but so Corey Davis scores that touchdown. I mean, honestly, Browns fans might have already known something bad was about to happen when he missed the extra point after the Chubb touchdown, just to backtrack for a second. Like, that's also something I didn't realize happened until later, ironically enough, because, you know, I'm like, all right, he probably made it. And then I see they have the chance to go ahead, not just tie it. I'm like, oh, wait, they missed an extra point. What?
It's amazing.
So yeah, it was the Corey Davis was the silent stadium, oh, what's happening moment. But you still are like, all right, well, it's not like they're going to get the onside kick. Like, I think I covered in college, not in college, when I covered University of Arizona, I covered them in the New Mexico Bowl in 1 year. I forget what year it was. And they did like a similar comeback, like 13 points in less than 2 minutes. And I think that's the only time I've ever seen like a successful onside kick in a game. So it's pretty rare. They executed it beautifully. Braden Mann like went like he was kicking it one way, kicked it the other way. Will Parks tipped it to Justin Hardy. And then at that point, you're like, oh, they're going to win. Like, everybody knew it in the whole building. The Browns, like, on defense were not playing defense. They just, like, stopped playing defense for some reason. I mean, everybody that's in the chat was watching the game. I don't need to go play by play, I guess. But and, you know, then Garrett Wilson scores that touchdown, and then I'm in the back of your head. I'm sure Jets fans are feeling this too. Like, the Browns get the ball back. They quickly get a long run from Jacoby Brissett. They're at midfield. Really only would have taken like one throw to the sideline to get into Cade York range. Like that dude drilled like a 59 yarder last week. And then Ashton Davis, of all people, comes in for his first snap of the season on defense and gets an interception. Like, it's like all the pieces of the guys that did it, how it happened. It's just like, it's just wild. But, you know, if the Jets were going to win, I guess it wasn't going to happen any other way. It was going to be something insane.
It had to be. Yeah. And we're going to get into a little more into the detail, specific players, how they did, what this means for the season going forward a little bit, 0-2 versus 1-1. I want to start though with just some of the numbers that kind of go into this comeback. First of all, it's their first win in September since the 2018 season, which snaps quite a streak. They're the first, this one, I think you tweeted this or you retweeted this, first NFL team to overcome a 13-point deficit in the final 2 minutes of a game and win in forever, which is
21 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I could not believe that it's been that long. Cause to me, like, okay, you score, you get an onside kick, you score. But a lot of times when that happens, one of those scores is a field goal, right? So yeah. Like, to have to do touchdown, onside kick, touchdown, I guess it's been a long time. Plus, as you just said, onside kicks now are so much harder to recover in the NFL than they used to be. Used to be able to get the running start.
Yeah.
And they kick it into the air and it would just be like much more of a random thing. Now it's almost impossible between the kicking at 10 yards and getting your player down there. But you mentioned it, man, doing an incredible job. And then the Browns had a 99.9% win probability with 1:55 to go, and they managed to lose this game. I mean, really remarkable. And so many things had to fall into place. Chubb had to score, right? He had to go in. And you had it in your story after the game that I was actually impressed by, because you think of, you know, yes, it would have been better for him to go down, but he scores. It's still a 13-point game. But the mindset from what you were describing on the Jets sideline was, okay, we got a chance now. Granted, it was a minor chance. Statistically, it was a 0.1% chance. But they felt that, hey, now we get a chance. Let's see what happens. Obviously, the broken coverage on the Corey Davis 66-yard touchdown reception. No idea how that happens in this situation, in a world where there's prevent defenses out there, how a guy breaks free like that. Man getting it done. And it's fascinating to me that the punter is the onside kick guy. Did anybody talk about that? The fact that he's the guy they go to onside kicks, not the place kicker?
I think they've just been practicing that with him, probably for a couple of years. I talked to Braden. By the way, he's like a part of this too, because after last week, like, one of the main topics among Jets fans was like how much they're like, cut him. They like wanted him gone as much as they've wanted anybody gone so far this season, including, I mean, Ashton Davis would be the other one. And because he had a bad game last week, he had that 20-yard shanked punt. Then he comes out today, he punted pretty well. He had the, by the way, this like just got forgotten because it didn't ultimately matter and there were so many other things that happened. He had the fake punt play in the first half.
Yeah.
Complete. It was a nice throw.
The best quarterback rating of anyone in the game.
There's like a decent amount of time where he had more passing yards. My dog's squeaking a toy in the background. I don't know if you hear that. So he completed that. Yeah, then he had this onside kick. Yeah, he said I asked him, I'm like, so do you guys practice onside kick all the time? Because you don't like, I don't know, I guess you need to prepare for anything. He's like, yeah, we usually do on Fridays and sometimes we'll also practice it on Wednesday. And I think they practice it both days this week. It's funny, I always hear like that kind of stuff the week something crazy like that happens. But yeah, what was your question? I kind of went on the sidetrack there.
Just the fact that the punter is the onside kick guy.
Yeah, the punter. Point. Yeah, like, yeah.
They could have been released him because of bad punting. Now you got to keep him around for his onside kicking.
Well, and by the way, maybe it makes more sense why they kept him around, because he's not just their punter. He also is their holder, right? And he does that too. So I think that's something to keep in mind going forward too. And by the way, Greg Zuerlein, also fans are ready to gut him after last week, and he hit a 57-yarder. So encouraging game from the special teams. Weirdly, you know, last week it was all defense. This week I thought the defense didn't have a very good game, to be honest, and the offense like carried them. Like, it, as DJ Reed said, it didn't, you know, I mean, he's obviously going to say it because he's on the team, but if they can get both of them working at the same time, like they're going to be in pretty good shape.
That's true. That's been a problem for this team for a long time, but hey, if you can do it, that's true. All right, let's get into some of the players and we'll start with that offense. Obviously the first guy you have to talk about, and you kind of went through a couple of guys who, you know, everybody wanted to get rid of after week one. Everyone also wanted to see Mike White play right after week one. Yeah. And here comes Joe Flacco, the team calling him Cool Joe and all this stuff. But I mean, vintage. I mean, I don't even know if you can say vintage about Joe Flacco, right? Because like, is there a vintage Joe Flacco? Maybe Super Bowl Joe Flacco. I don't know. But 26 of 44, 307, four touchdowns, no picks. He did have the fumble on the strip sack fumble, but the rating 110.7. And that was a great play, the fumble force. He was kind of in motion. I don't think he even knew.
I mean, it was Miles Garrett,
That Garrett was there just flying around the edge. But the things that stood out to me about Flacco was week one, we talked about how Baltimore got pressure on him and he was too slow to get rid of the ball. He's obviously immobile at this point in his career for the most part. And there was just this fear that with this Jets offensive line, how is it going to get better for Joe Flacco weeks one, two, three, at least maybe more. We'll see how Wilson, when he gets back. But in this game, he got rid of the ball, felt like on time. Usually he was hitting the back foot. He didn't delay too much. We'll get to the offensive line and their role in this as well. But he also actually ran for a first down at one point, looked not fleet of foot, but saw an opportunity and was able to take advantage of it. He just looked so much more composed and confident against a team that's pass rushes coming into this just as intimidating as the Ravens was.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this, that they how they needed it if they were going to win this game. I mean, actually, Joe Flacco said it earlier in the week even. He said about how if they might have to do this by doing long drives, you know, and just working their way up the field, running the ball well, quick passes. And that's kind of what they did early in the game. Like, he was really efficient. He's getting the ball quick. He clearly has a connection with Garrett Wilson. We're obviously going to talk a lot about Garrett. We can get to that in a little bit. But he clearly has a chemistry and a trust in that guy. And he just, like, operated the offense. Like, there was a couple throws that he made that were bad, but, like, there were much more good than bad from him. It's funny, like, he's 37 years old, and you still were confident in him going out in that last drive that he's going to lead them up the field, and not every quarterback could do that. And, you know, I was talking about with some other beat writers. They asked the question, like, would Zach Wilson have been able to guide this 13-point comeback? And maybe he would have. Like, it's not really fair to say he would or wouldn't necessarily, but we haven't seen that he's capable of doing that sort of thing that Joe did. Just, like, you know, come in, don't make mistakes, make the right throws, make the simple throws. Like, that last drive, their whole thing was, like, don't go too fast, because they were so confident they were going to score. They're like, don't go too fast. Let's be meticulous. Let's work our way up the field. That's exactly what they did, and they didn't really leave. I mean, they got the interception anyway. But he was just very efficient. I think I was just, like, in Pro Football Focus, had him graded as the fifth best quarterback in the league this week. That's pretty good. He was throwing the ball downfield more than he did last week, which was almost not at all. I think he averaged something like 9 yards in the air.
Week one, 4.85 yards per attempt, was 31st of 32. Week two so far, 8.64 yards. So it almost doubled his yards per attempt. And that was 9th of 27 so far.
Yeah. So they were throwing him more downfield. I think Garrett Wilson had a lot to do with that. He was getting open. This feels inevitable because it's the Jets. Like, if they win next week, I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself. If they're 2-1 going into that game where Zach Wilson's supposed to be back, we're going to go from fans were calling for Flacco to be drawn and quartered to Joe Flacco should probably stay at starter until he loses, kind of thing. Like, it's kind of like the Mike White thing from last year where Mike White was great and all of a sudden you're like, are we sure that Mike White shouldn't start? So I'm curious to see how that plays out in the fan base. I mean, if Flacco has another great game, you don't want to ruin the chemistry, I guess. I don't know. That's going to be a discussion for another week, obviously. But, Flacco he's a solid backup NFL quarterback, and he can get the job done when he needs to. And he hasn't really made, like last week, I know he wasn't amazing, but it wasn't like he made these alarming mistakes. The only interception he had last week was when the guy fell. So they should be very encouraged by this. And if the offense can play like this and, you know, keep going in the right direction, the offensive line keeps getting better, then by the time Zach Wilson gets back, his supporting cast is going to be like locked and loaded. And then you're just going to be relying on Zach living up to his potential.
And that is going to be the story for the rest of the season from that point on. You mentioned the O-line, 2 sacks, 4 quarterback hits, 14 pressures. 5 of those were George Fant. Overall, though, I think somebody showed a video I saw on Twitter this morning of the final touchdown play and the fact that Max Mitchell did just enough to get in front of the to get in front of the block and to get things done to give Joe just enough time to find the route of the middle. But it wasn't an offensive line that you're going to sit here and be like, whoa, these guys, they really, you know, are one of the better or an above average offensive line. But they did enough against a team that is used to being able to get to the quarterback, and with a quarterback behind them who is not quick. And hey, he stood up for most of this game.
Yeah. You know, I think in the beginning they were getting a decent amount of pressure. A lot of it was coming from Myles Garrett, but again, like we said on the preview pod, the best offensive linemen get beat by Myles Garrett. So, you know, the strip sack was tough. I think Joe needed to show maybe a little better like pocket awareness. Like he just like was not ready for the idea that he was coming around, and you know, the way he was like blocking him to the outside, and he just kind of reached around because he's such a large human. But from then on, like, you know, Myles Garrett made some plays, but you didn't notice him as much. And that's like the best thing you could say about the offensive line. And they did a really good job run blocking. You know, Breece Hall had a pretty good game. Michael Carter was making some good runs. There was one that was called back because of a hold. I forget who had the hold. I'm blanking right now. I was encouraged. You know, again, like you said, they're not like, this isn't your, like we're going to say they're a top 10 offensive line or anything, but if they keep going in the right direction, again, the biggest concern for Zach Wilson was that he was going to be going behind this offensive line. That was a problem. At least for me, that was a big concern. So by the time he gets back, if this offensive line is rolling and they're doing, and you know, Max Mitchell keeps improving, he's shown some encouraging signs these last 2 weeks, you know, still some bumps, but they're going to be really good. By the way, Max Mitchell, he deserves a shout out because they might not win this game if, you know, Tyler Conklin has another fumble. They're deep in their own territory, and Max Mitchell immediately jumps on it. If the Browns recover that, they'd be at like the Jets' 20-yard line. They would have scored for sure. So there's a few plays like that that were kind of like sneaky big moments in this game that kind of fly under the radar because everything was like condensed in the last 2 minutes. But Max Mitchell he's like a heady player, and that's a positive thing. And they don't really have depth on the offensive line, so they're still in a spot where if anybody gets hurt, they're in a lot of trouble. But very encouraged. Elijah Vera Tucker has been very good. Lakin Tomlinson was better. I think he only had 3 pressures given up. Connor McGovern was okay. That's all 5 of them. So, you know, they're on the right track.
Yeah, on the right track, and we'll see how that continues to build. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the rookie performances in this game. The lights were not too bright for sure. First road game for these rookies, but first, a quick break. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's talk about the rookies on the offense. And Zach, the Jets may have a star receiver on their hands. Usually it takes time for receivers to develop as rookies. Obviously, you know, we've seen the Chases of the world and guys in recent years who have done it as rookies. But usually there's a learning curve. And during the summer, it felt like there was a big learning curve for Garrett Wilson, right? That's something we talked about, the fact that he was a little bit slow in OTAs and getting up to speed. But man, did he show on Sunday. 8 catches, 102 yards, and 2 touchdowns, including the game winner. And he just, to me, you can tell when a player is a little bit different, right? A little special when they have the ball in their hands. And he looked like that guy in this game.
Yeah. I just want to do a correction real quick. It was Jadeveon Clowney that had the strip sack, not Myles Garrett. So that's my bad. I saw some people call me out for that. I am very tired in my defense. but yeah, so Garrett Wilson, you know, again, this is another thing that we were talking about last week. Like, they need to get this guy in the field. He clearly has the most juice out of their receivers, like in my eyes. And they clearly rectified that error. And he was the number one receiver. He was one of the best receivers in the league this week. You know, I've been saying since camp, like, you know, he was having a lot of drops in camp, and he had a bad drop that he made up for, obviously, yesterday. That could have been pretty costly. It was on third down. It would have been a first down in Browns territory, and he dropped it. And he was getting worried that he was going to cost them the game. Anyway, in training camp, like the one thing I thought, like, you look at him, and he's not that tall. He's not that big. He's like something like 6'1" or something like that. Doesn't really weigh that much. And then you see the way he plays. He plays like somebody who's 6'4". It's kind of like a Justin Jefferson thing. And that's been a popular comparison. DJ Reed said it first. Tyler Conklin said it today. Like, the way they move, the way they run routes, their athleticism, their route running. He's very impressive to me. And I said before last week, I think he's the most talented receiver on this roster already. And I'm someone who's high on Elijah Moore too. So I really do think they found a stud. We have like a system that we use at The Athletic called True Media. It's like this like deep dive, like analytics, stat stuff. And I was just like, you know, just playing around and finding some Garrett Wilson stuff. And I saw there's a stat called EPA, which is expected points added. It's basically like a wins above replacement type of stat. He had a 17.14 EPA, which is the best that any Jets rookie, I believe receiver, has had in at least 20 years. And it's the best that any Jets receiver has done since Robbie Anderson and Jermaine Curse in the same game against the Chiefs in 2017. So that's his second game. You know, I tweeted this last night. Like, I thought his ceiling was, you know, I thought he had the ability to get to this point. I thought by the end of the year we would be talking about Garrett Wilson in the way that we are right now. I did not expect it to happen in week two. You know, we saw even flashes last week on that, like that play he made where he juked a few guys to get almost a first down on that Flacco heave against the Ravens. But he just came out on Sunday, and it was just like one play after another he was making. It was impressive. Whether it was he was making plays after the catch, or he had a few where he juked one of the touchdowns. I think it was his first touchdown. He like juked the guy at the line of scrimmage, and he just created enough space to get wide open. That happened multiple times. Like, that's like a veteran move. He's super athletic. He's tricking these talented cornerbacks already. And the fact that like people are calling him Justin Jefferson, and I haven't seen anybody say that's insane. You got to stop saying that. I mean, I guess Jets fans are most of the people in my mentions, but I don't know. Like, I know it's still early, and he's gonna have his bumps, but the Jets have had a hard time finding like a star receiver for a long time, and I really do think they found him. And you know, there was a scary moment where he got hurt briefly, where he like landed weird on the sideline, and he was kind of down for a while, and then he went to the medical tent. And I think I was a little concerned because he came out limping a little bit. Then he went back in the game, and you know, first he had the drop, and then he had the touchdown at the end, which was another great play where it was like in the middle of the Browns defense again was giving him a lot of space. But I was just very impressed with his route running. If you're a young receiver that is that good at, you know, getting open, I think that's his, because he's not just relying on his athleticism, he's relying on his ability to do the right thing and trick these corners and, you know, make them bite and all that stuff. So, you know, the sky's the limit for this kid. And now all of a sudden his rookie season potential is, you know, I mean, I hate to say it after one game, but like if he plays like this, he has offensive rookie of the year potential. I don't know many rookies that are playing better than him right now. So
that's funny, because a lot of people had Breece Hall picked as a guy who could be offensive player of the year, rookie player of the year, and maybe it's the other guy. But another stat you had, Joe Flacco's QBR when Wilson was in the game was 102.5. His QBR without Wilson in the game, 63.8. And he was clearly his go-to guy. And it's funny, you mentioned Elijah Moore and obviously all the talent he has. There's a world where very soon Corey Davis is the number three receiver talent wise on this team, right? Like, I saw somebody mention that after the 66 yarder that's a pretty good play from our number three receiver.
I saw a lot of people tweeting that we have the best number three wide receiver in the league with Corey Davis.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're quite, because if you look at the snap count, Garrett Wilson still technically only played like 40-something snaps. There was less snaps overall. So I think they still trust Corey Davis more when it comes to, like, you know, the run blocking and stuff like that. But it's definitely trending in the direction of Garrett Wilson being like the receiver in 11 personnel. And I mean, you know, you don't obviously don't wish injuries upon anybody or anything, but like Corey Davis does get hurt a lot. So at some point he might just naturally be the number two, and then we'll get Mimsy in there and fans will be happier than ever.
That's what we're all waiting for. All right. I mentioned Breece Hall. Let's talk about him as well. You know, limited action, to be honest, seven carries, 50 yards, a touchdown, a catch, and 10 yards, and the touchdown was on the catch. But the play breakdown, 17 plays for Hall. Michael Carter had 43. You know, when you look at what they did, it went the other way. Hall was more productive. So how does that – is that a number that slowly kind of changes as the season goes on? Or do you think, like, next week we get to a 50-50 or 55-45 type split between these guys?
You know, I think it depends on the game script. I get the sense that they trust Michael Carter more in as like a pass in pass protection in the passing game, even if Hall's more
that.
and so the point, like, so if they're in games where they're throwing it as much as they have the last 2 weeks, I think you're probably going to see Michael Carter playing more. If they're in a game where they have a lead early, which would be nice to cover a Jets game where they have a lead that they have to protect instead of a comeback, some miraculous comeback. I mean, that was a fun game, but the preference is, like, you know, they're ahead the whole game, because that would be a fun idea. And that's kind of the situation where I think maybe you give it to Breece Hall a bunch. You know, not to dig too much into the analytics stuff, because I was curious about, like, why they were playing Carter so much more. Like, was he that much better in the passing game? And, like, the same thing with the EPA stuff. I looked at, like, so when, in terms of, like, rushing plays, like, Breece Hall is clearly the better player. But when it's, like, passing plays, when Breece Hall is on the field during passing plays, it was like -6 EPA. And when Michael Carter's on the field for passing plays, it's +13 EPA. So there's quite a discrepancy there. I think, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that Michael Carter is like the reason why their passing game is good when he's in there, but he's a smart player. He's good pass catcher. He's a good running back. Like I tweeted something last night about how, like, I think Hall needs to play more. And people took that as me, like, saying Michael Carter is, like, not that good or something. I think he's a good starting quality running back. I just think you see – it's kind of like how we were talking about Garrett Wilson last week. You see Breece Hall when he has the ball in his hand, and he can just do some impressive things. And I think he needs more touches. You know, again, it's game script dependent in part. But I'd like to see Breece Hall playing a little more, to be honest.
It's just got – there's an explosiveness to him that I feel like Carter doesn't have. Although Carter has that little of that as well. But Hall just looks impressive when he's got the ball in space. All right, we've talked all about the good, I guess. Actually, before we get to the defense, I did want to revisit. It was almost unanimous. I asked about this was the biggest win since blank. All kinds of people going with week 16 in 2015, the win over the Patriots. And that one's interesting because of what you think would happen after it, which was, you know, not as good. And we'll see what this team does after it. And then a few people saying the Monday Night Miracle as another one for this team. But Jets fans in sync on the answer to that question, I guess, is what I'll say. All right.
Yeah.
What I was saying before, it wasn't all good. The defense wasn't good. This Browns team, obviously, they put up 30 points. Could have been 31 points with the extra point. But in the fourth quarter, especially, I mean, the Browns moved the ball pretty well throughout. But in the fourth quarter, it really felt like, I don't know if the Jets were gassed at that point, tired, but the Browns were kind of doing what they wanted to do. Early in the game, they were running it successfully as well. There wasn't a lot of pressure. So if you look at this game and you say, what do we got to do? What do the Jets have to do better? It's this defense. It just wasn't what we thought it was. I think we went into this game thinking the defense would have to be the reason they won. And you kind of said it at the top, the offense ended up being that.
Yeah.
So what went wrong on the defensive side?
You know, I'm new to the Jets relative to, like, everybody that, you know, expected me to know everything that has happened in the past with the Jets and stuff. So I tweeted something like, man, the Browns are really having an easy time on, like, screen passes. And, like, Zach, that's been happening for a long time. That's not new around here. Cause it was like, you know, the Jets were going all in on trying to stop Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, which even when they were trying, they would just break tackles because those dudes are just so talented. I think Nick Chubb had 3 touchdowns, including the one that he probably wishes he didn't have, and I think something like 100 total yards, something like that. Kareem Hunt was pretty good. They were just, you know, clogging the box, trying to get them to stop the run, and then they would just do these quick passes in the middle of the field or to the running backs out of the backfield, and it was working every time. There's a lot of missed tackles. It's a huge problem they have right now that they need to fix. Jordan Whitehead and LaMarcus Joyner, I think, are the biggest problems in that area. They each had 4 missed tackles, according to Pro Football Focus. The safety spot in general, I'm starting to get real concerned about, because I thought Jordan Whitehead looked pretty good in camp. Now it's starting to, it's only 2 games. It's starting to feel like maybe we get why he was as available as he was and why he didn't cost that much. Like maybe he's not the guy that you want as your best safety. Maybe he's better as like a complimentary piece, because those two guys have had some issues. You know, Sauce Gardner got dinged with allowing a touchdown on that Amari Cooper play, where Amari Cooper just was wide open in the end zone. It seemed like he was open a lot in the middle of the field. But the touchdown looked like it was another miscommunication between Joyner and Gardner, where Sauce thought he was going to get some help, and then the help wasn't there. And so Amari Cooper just sitting there wide open, and Jacoby Brissett hit it. I think Jacoby was like 16 of 18 to start the game, something like that. It was a lot of short passes, like it wasn't down the field, but they were just having a really easy time. And it was really concerning because, you know, we came out of week 1 saying how impressive this defense was, and they just did not come out. I don't want to say they didn't come out ready, but they just were not tackling well. The pass rush wasn't really getting there. You know, there's a sack later in the game with Carl Lawson that he split with somebody, I think Quinnen. But yep. Before that, like, you didn't notice Carl Lawson at all. You know, Quincy Williams, I don't think, had a particularly good game.
Mosley got juked bad by Brissett.
Mosley got juked bad. On the Brissett run. I think DJ Reed had a good game again. He was pretty. He's a much better tackler. He's honestly impressed me as a player in general. I think he's even better than I could have imagined, by the way. He ironically had the missed tackle that led to the touchdown. And Robert Saleh was like, "That's the happiest I've ever been on a missed tackle." And DJ Reed didn't realize in the moment that he accidentally made the right move. Like, he was talking about how he was mad at himself for blowing that tackle and stuff. So he's still a bright spot. I think Gardner was better than, like, I don't know if he deserved to get dinged with a touchdown. He actually got banged up at one point and left the game, and Brandon Echols came in randomly for a couple snaps and had a pass breakup in the end zone against a tight end. That was really impressive. Bryce Hall, inactive. So clearly he's not, I don't know if he's long for this team. I think he might get traded at some point. I don't know when or what you'll get for him, but he went from, in air quotes, competing with Sauce Gardner to start to being inactive in week 2,
right?
Which isn't great. But yeah, so I have some concerns about the defense, the tackling. I don't think it'll be that. They're not going to play these teams that are run heavy every week. They played 2 of the most run heavy teams in the league back to back. The Bengals are going to air it out. Like, they have Joe Burrow, they have Ja'Marr Chase, they have T. Higgins, they have Tyler Boyd. This is a team that's not going to run it. They have Joe Mixon, but they're not a grinded out team unless other teams realize that maybe that's the way you beat the Jets, I guess. I don't know, especially because their corners are good. So it's not going to be like this every week, but I was not encouraged by that game, because if that's all you need to do to beat the Jets, and every team's just going to do that. They're going to do dink and dunk, and they're going to dink and dunk the Jets until they make a mistake down the field, which they inevitably do a couple times a game at safety. So there's some concerns. I'm not ready to, like, panic or anything like that, because we saw what they're capable of in week 1. But the pass rush needs to get better, and the tackling needs to get better. And need to figure something out at safety, because it's a problem.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Jacoby Brissett just looked really comfortable for most of this game, right? Like, and that's not a guy that should look comfortable. He should look like a backup quarterback, which is basically really what he is. Granted, he'll be starting most of the year until Deshaun Watson's ready to go. All right, let's put this game, let's try to put it into a little bit of perspective with expectations going forward. I should always have this ready, but I never do. Our predictions for the season and how we thought it would play out. Let me zip down to it real quick here. But I feel like we both,
we both had
them losing the Ravens and we both had them beating the Browns. Now,
so we're perfect.
Things are a little different, I think, going into this game because of what the Browns did in week one and what the Jets did in week one. But according to our expectations for this team, you and me, Zach, we thought they'd be 1-1 at this point, and they are 1-1 at this point. Yep. Now they get to an interesting week here because you face a Bengals team that on one hand I assumed was definitely a loss. This is a team that went to the Super Bowl a year ago. Was only going to get better, right? Like, Joe Burrow is not going to take steps back. This guy is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. This team's going to be great with confidence from going to a Super Bowl. They're 0-2. So, like, at this point, I don't know what to think. But from the Jets, the way they won this game, which you can look at in two different ways. On one hand, they never quit. They easily could have rolled over down 13 points with 2 minutes to go. It would have been very easy to just, all right, head back to New York. They didn't. They kept their head in the game. They came back and won this thing. On the other hand, we just pointed out how bad the defense was. So when you look at this team as a whole, where are your expectations for the next 16 weeks?
Give you coach speak and say I'm taking it week by week, right?
that's fair.
A few guys were pretty thoughtful in the way they talked about, like, you know, obviously they were confident that they could do this kind of thing. Sheldon Rankins, he called it confirmed validity is the phrase that he learned, where, you believe you can do something, but once you actually do it, it's like, okay, we did it. And now we know that we actually can do this. And now we can go forward knowing with that knowledge that it's not just talk, that we can do it. So I think this win is really, like, no matter how they got it, they got a win. And I think it's going to really be a boost. And you know, I said before the season, I think this team is good enough to be competitive every week. Neither of us thought they're going to make the playoffs, obviously. You want to be playing meaningful games, whatever that means, in December, which they haven't done in a long time. And, you know, I after 2 weeks, I feel the same way I did before the season. I think they can still do that. The Bengals are more beatable than I thought they would be. And that's why it's so hard to do these predictions because, you know, you're doing it all your opinions are mostly based on the previous season. And then you look at, like, the Dolphins look like an offense that everybody's going to have a lot of trouble with. And that's like a very talented team. And that I think we both might have even had them winning that game. I can't remember.
I think we might have had them splitting with Miami.
Okay. Yeah.
That looks.
And this, like, the Steelers, like, they're a team that, you know, maybe they don't seem scary on paper, but they're the Steelers. Like, they'll have games out. The schedule doesn't look maybe as scary as it did before. Like, the Broncos look like they're a little dysfunctional. The Patriots look bad. So maybe this first half of the schedule doesn't look as scary as it did when you looked at it before the season. But This is going to be a very week-to-week Jets team. I think you're going to have a lot of highs and lows. You're going to have week, especially when Zach Wilson gets back, because of the nature of how he plays, and since we don't really know if he's ready to take the next step yet and all that stuff, you're going to have weeks where maybe he has a great game and the offense goes off, or you're going to have a week where the defense has a great game and they get some sacks and stuff, and you're going to have weeks where the secondary falls apart again, and this team's and fans are going to be frustrated. So I think it'll eventually even out. They'll get to the, you know, 6 to 8 win range that we all predicted before the season, I think. I don't feel any differently about that. We're going to keep saying it. I've been saying it even this podcast. The season comes down to Zach Wilson. Like, how far or not they go is going to come down to him and if he's good enough to lead this team, because they clearly have the talent on offense. I think that's unquestionable. I think we see that with Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore. Maybe the tight ends haven't been as good as you would like. Offensive line's getting better. The running backs are really good. So I feel good in saying that the talent around Zach Wilson is going to be perfectly fine. So it's all on his shoulders, and that's what he deserves as the number 2 overall pick. And he needs to prove to everybody that he can handle that.
We both had them 3-6 going into the bye week. If that becomes 4-5, second half of the season, I think it's really interesting. But we'll see if they can get there, break down the season into little bits. You mentioned Zach Wilson. That's the transition to what we need to finish this episode on, which is there any chance Zach Wilson is ready to play week 3? I know he's practiced the last couple of weeks. They say they want him at 110%. Is there any chance? I guess, is there any chance he's ready to play? But then the other question is, considering how well Joe Flacco played this week, would you even bother?
Either way, I would say he's not playing this week. Whether Flacco had a good game this week or not, I know fans have been saying that all week because they saw the videos of him warming up in practices last week and stuff. They're not rushing him back. I think they're committed to not doing that. If they did bring him back this week, then that would be another instance of us being told one thing about injuries and then the other thing happening. So I don't see that happening. I think they're going to take it one more week. They trust Joe Flacco to go out there, obviously. They don't have to deal with the Mike White noise, which, you know, it felt inevitable because it's Cincinnati and that's the team that he went off against last year. And you know the Bengals are going to remember that too. But, yeah, so I still anticipate Zach Wilson week 4, Pittsburgh. I know earlier people seem to think in the comments that I was saying that I think they should keep Joe Flacco as a starter. I was not saying that necessarily, but I think that it's at least going to be like a thought process of like, okay, is Zach Wilson 100% yet? If not, all right, we trust Joe. We can get him another week if we have to. But yeah, to answer your question, no, I don't see Zach this week. I hope we see him more practicing more. He was limited last week. I imagine they'll start incorporating him in the team drills. That's not a report. That's just me guessing. And if they start doing that and he comes out feeling okay, then you're on a good track there.
All right. One last thing before we say goodbye. And that is an emotional win like this when the team rallies and obviously didn't quit. I assume at some level, Chris Streveler was behind the scenes pulling strings, right?
I mean, he had to. I'm sure I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet. I'm sure he was encouraging them before they went out for that last drive. And yeah, so Chris Streveler, yeah, he's probably going to be, see who they're playing, the Bengals. So he's probably going to pretend to be Joe Burrow this week, and he's going to do a great job.
Tremendous job. Well, hopefully he's gets them ready by being last year's Joe Burrow and not week 1 and 2 Joe Burrow. We'll see. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Can't Wait podcast. If you want to join The Athletic, you can. Great deal running, $1 a month for 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/can't wait. You can read all of Zach's great stuff, all of our other football writers. We just added some more great talent to our writing group on the football side. Plus, baseball is heading towards the playoffs. Basketball and hockey are ready to go. So much great stuff on The Athletic and so affordable right now, $1 a month for up to 6 months. Zach, enjoy the week. Fans, enjoy the week. The Jets are 1-1.
Victory Monday.
And yeah, enjoy the rest of your Victory Monday. We'll talk to you again later this week.